The Guardian.
In the second day of our serialisation of Jonathan Powell's book, we concentrate on Britain's 30-year-long back channel to the IRA. Jonathan, if you could tell us about that. The back channel dates back to 1972 when Stormont, the unionist majority government, was dissolved and Willie Whitelaw was made the first Northern Ireland secretary.
Yes, it was interesting. I only knew about these contacts in the most general sort of way when in government, and I found out quite a lot more about it since by talking to people involved. What happened was that even while the Stormont government was up and running, the British government started sending out people to have a look at what they were up to, because up until that moment they'd paid absolutely no attention to the Stormont government. And there was a standard line in the Home Office, which was the department responsible for Northern Ireland, saying it's none of our business and we're going to leave it alone. But they got worried about it in the early 70s, and they sent out a diplomat, Oliver Wright, a very distinguished diplomat, went on to be ambassador in Washington. They sent him out as a sort of ambassador to Northern Ireland, if you like, to keep an eye on what the Stormont government was up to. And they set up an office up by Hollywood in a rather large, I think it was Edwardian, I don't know, but anyway, an old house. And they gradually started adding people to it, spooks and any civil servants they could get their hands on. And Frank Steele, who was the first spook who was sent out there, who'd been a district officer in Kenya and had to negotiate with Jomo Kenyatta when he was regarded as a terrorist leader, had taken it upon himself to roam around in the Bogside and in West Belfast and the Falls Road, meeting people and trying to establish contacts. And it was he who negotiated the visit by Adams and McGuinness and their leaders at the time, because Adams and McGuinness were both young men and young members of the movement, but they went with their leaders to Cheyne Walk to meet Willie Whitelaw. And that was the beginning of a channel, which then continued pretty much unbroken through to today, although it wasn't always used that much, but the channel was always there.
I mean, it is absolutely extraordinary, isn't it, to think that one thinks of Margaret Thatcher, who was, you know, a major target of the IRA. They very nearly killed her. And there was the back channel, and it was activated during the hunger strikes when she was Prime Minister, and she approved it.
Yeah, the first time that the channel really came into its own was over the ceasefire in 1974, when there were lengthy negotiations, again, between Spooks Mountain Climber in particular, Michael Oatley, and the IRA leadership, facilitated by Brendan Duddy. But the channel continued after Michael Oatley left Northern Ireland and was reactivated, as you say, at the time of the hunger strikes. And Michael Oatley went over and talked to the prisoners' representatives at Belfast Airport. And actually, they did find a way of solving the problem, although it later unwound and we went into the second hunger strike, unfortunately.
Now, the back channel became famous in more recent times when John Major famously said in 1993 that it would turn his stomach to think of talking to Sinn Féin, and then it turned out that that is exactly what they were doing. And there was that famous message which you write about in March 1993, which essentially boils down to Martin McGuinness is supposed to have passed the message down the back channel that the war is over and we need your, Britain's, help in how to end it. That was quite a big moment, but obviously that message is in dispute, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, I have a lot of sympathy for John Major and Paddy Mayhew in the way that they had to handle these contacts. Democratic governments find it very hard to admit that they're talking to terrorists who are carrying on an active campaign and killing their people. It's not just true of Britain, it's true all around the world where people find themselves in analogous situations. So I think people really rather understood when they denied it, and then had to come to the House of Commons and admit to it. I know that Paddy Mayhew was very nervous when he went to the House to admit to it, but actually he got fulsome support from his own side and from the Labour side, because people really did understand why it was necessary. The channel started up again in 1992 when Michael Oatley, who was retiring from the Secret Intelligence Service, went over to see Brendan Duddy again and actually met Martin McGuinness face to face, a meeting actually Martin referred to yesterday to me when we were talking. And it's that's what got the channel going again. Michael had retired, and a new operative took over working the channel called Fred, or known as Fred. And he would go backwards and forwards with messages from one side to the other. But the two crucial messages, the first one where Martin McGuinness appeared to be calling for help in bringing the war to an end, and the last one where, again, there was a very enthusiastic message that purported to come from Martin McGuinness. Martin has always denied having given those messages, and it isn't entirely clear quite how such positive messages came about.
But do you think that those sort of 91, 92, 93 messages Was that a helpful part of the process, or did it actually not help it because it did fizzle out and there was the big row? Sinn Féin said, we didn't send that message. There was the row, which you talk about in your book, about the British government putting out its line and it was incorrect, there were errors. Was it a good thing, or was it actually not that helpful then?
No, I think it was actually essential. I think if you hadn't had... You see, the whole thing about Northern Ireland, the whole problem, really, relative to Britain, is that British leaders have not wanted to pay any attention to Northern Ireland. There's no political gain to be had in immersing yourself in the issue. There's no real advantage, and Churchill's well-known sore about it, so the dreary spires and towers of Manor and Tyrone, really typified British attitudes. People didn't want to get involved. And what that message succeeded in doing, true or not, was to get the attention of the British government. And John Major really thought, gosh, here's a chance that we can make a breakthrough in Northern Ireland. And despite having been attacked himself with the mortars and the attempt to kill him, he really dedicated himself to trying to bring about peace. And I don't think he necessarily would have done so had there not been such a clear message from the IRA.
And can I just ask you about one of the people involved in this back channel, and that's Brendan Duddy, the Derry businessman who is Republican but is a pacifist. You pay warm tribute to him in the book.
Well, for a long time, his identity has not been known. There have been books written about these contacts with the IRA, but he's always just been called the contact or the link, and has never actually come out into the open for pretty obvious reasons. But the time has now come, I think, that his role should be recognised, because he was very brave. And the fact that he ran this link for so long and at such personal risk deserves real credit, because without it, I think it would have been very difficult to see how the British government would ever have started talking to Republicans, because you'd always been in dispute. You'd never had such a link, no channel down which you could communicate. I think it was very important that it existed.
And I think he went through quite a tricky period, didn't he, over the disputed message of March 93?
Yes. I mean, I think the people... actually, I think, funnily enough, on the Republican side, I don't think they ever blamed him for it. I think it's pretty clear to me that they held others responsible.
Right. Now, in your book, you disclose that it's not just the British government that had a secret back channel to the Republican movement. The DUP, Ian Paisley Party, they had a secret back channel through to Sinn Féin through a Belfast journalist. Pretty extraordinary, that.
Yes, there was they established a back channel after they won the elections in 2003 in Northern Ireland. As with many back channels, it served a useful purpose in building confidence between the two sides, but could never really bear the weight of negotiations. Occasionally people would try and sort of negotiate issues on it, and it rather, as I describe in the book, collapsed rather badly in those circumstances. And again, it's not the only incident I can think of that happening in other countries where such back channels exist. They do play a role, because if people can't actually talk face-to-face, it's very helpful to have some way that they can communicate and build confidence between the two sides. But generally speaking, they're not quite strong enough to carry the full weight of the negotiation, and you need someone else to shuttle between the sides.
But what's interesting about that DUP link is that they had that back channel at a time when the DUP were saying, we will not sit down with Sinn Féin, we will not acknowledge them as political players, because they haven't, as the DUP would say, taken the necessary steps to show that they are wholly committed to non-violent methods. So that was quite something for the DUP to do that, wasn't it, to have that channel?
Yes, and that's why it was important to keep it secret. But they were no different in that than the British government at the time of John Major or Margaret Thatcher, saying that they never had contacts with the IRA, but actually doing so as well. So they were not unique in denying what they were up to. And I think it did play an important role in making possible that extraordinary meeting between Ian Paisley and Gerry Adams. I don't know you'd have... they'd never met and they'd never spoken until they sat down for that photo opportunity in March 2007. And I think if you hadn't had that back channel building confidence over time, it would have been difficult for that to come about.
For more discussion and analysis, download Guardian Daily. That's the Guardian's news podcast, available first thing in the morning, Monday to Friday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.